some of the ideals are factually true. The Forerunners were sophisticated above all other empires and powerful almost beyond measure. Our Ecumene spanned 3 million fertile worlds. We had achieved the greatest heights of technology and physical knowledge, at least since the time of the Precursors, who, some say, shaped us in their image and rewarded that image with their breath. The tugging threads of this part of the tale, the first of three, are journey, daring, betrayal, and fate. My fate, the fate of a foolish Forerunner, was joined one night with the fates of two humans and the long world line of a great military leader. That night on which I put in motion the circumstances that triggered the final wave of the hideous flood. So be this tale told. So be the telling true. Chapter 1. Sol, Edom to Erde Tyrene. The boat's crew banked the fires, disengaged the steam engine, and raised the calliope horn from the water. The bubbling clockwork song died out with a series of clicks and sad groans. It hadn't been working well to begin with. 20 kilometers away, the central peak of Jamankan Crater rose through blue-gray haze, its tip outlined in ruddy gold by the last of the setting sun. A single brilliant moon rose bright and cold behind our boat. The crater's inland lake rippled around the hull in ways no tide or wind had ever moved water. Under the swells and whorls, sparkling with reflected sunset and moon, pale merce twisted and bobbed like the lilies in my mother's pond. These lilies, however, weren't passive flowers, but sleeping krakens growing in the shallows on thick stalks. 10 meters wide, their thickened, muscular edges were rimmed with black teeth the length of my forearm. We sailed over a garden of clannish, self-cloning monsters. They covered the entire flooded floor of the crater, skulking just below the surface and very defensive of their territory. Only boats that sang the lulling song the merce used to keep peace among themselves could cross these waters unmolested. And now it seemed our tunes were out of date. The young human I knew as Shakus crossed the deck, clutching his palm-frond hat and shaking his head. We stood side by side and stared out over the rail, watching the merce writhe and churn. Shakus, bronze-skinned, practically hairless, and totally unlike the bestial image of humans my tutors had impressed upon me, shook his head in dismay.
"They swear they're using the newest songs," he murmured. "We shouldn't move until they figure it out."
I eyed the crew on the bow, engaged in whispered argument. "You assured me they were the best," I reminded him. He regarded me with eyes like polished onyx and swept his hand through a thick thatch of black hair that hung in back to his neck, cut perfectly square.
"My father knew their fathers."
"You trust your father?" I asked.
"Of course," he said. "Don't you?"
"I haven't seen my real father in 3 years," I said.
"Is that sad for you?"
the young human asked. "He sent me there," I pointed to a bright russet point in the black sky, "to learn discipline."
"Shasha,"
the Florian, a smaller variety of human, half Shakus's height, scampered from the stern on bare feet to join us. I had never known a species to vary so widely, yet maintain such an even level of intelligence. His voice was soft and sweet, and he made delicate signs with his fingers. In his excitement, he spoke too rapidly for me to understand. Shakus interpreted.
"He says you need to take off your armor. It's upsetting the merce."
At first, this was not a welcome suggestion.